started in
Justice and Drew. My name is Drew, back from a severe case of false alarmatitis.
Is that what we're calling
that's,
it?
That's what it was officially diagnosed as, false alarmatitis.
It happens.
It was bad.
It happens.
It was bad. It was rough.
Yeah.
I barely made it.
Somebody who
I'm happy to be back.
Somebody who did not have a case of false alarmatitis.
real alarmatitis.
Good morning, Brett.
Hi, guys.
Fake Sam in there pushing our buttons this morning.
Sam just decided to trade spots with Drew.
Yeah, so. She was actually sick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I was apparently fake sick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, man. Yeah.
I woke up and I talked to you on Monday. I had said on Monday that I was worried that I felt like I was getting the beginnings of a cold.
Yeah.
I have a couple of very specific things that happen to me every time I get a cold, and it usually starts with the dry, itchy throat. And that'll happen for a couple days. And I'd mentioned to you on Monday that over the weekend I was feeling that and I was a little worried. And sure enough, I woke up Tuesday morning, yesterday morning, and I was all stuffy. You know, my throat was scratchy and raw. So I texted John. I was like, well, you know, I better safe than sorry. You know, they say if you're feeling sick, stay home. So,
like I said yesterday, man, Omicron wall's closing in.
By 9 a.m., I felt fine. Before the show was over,
yeah.
I was sitting in my house. I feel like an idiot. I feel so dumb for staying home.
In the meantime, Sam was going downhill.
Right.
So she was feeling worse. So yeah. So thankfully Brett was back from wherever you were visiting, and we're able to join us again this morning. So hopefully Sam will get better soon.
We very much appreciate it.
Yeah, man. On the show today, we're going to talk about the most exciting tweet from Governor Tim Walz so far about a hot dish. We'll do that at 7 o'clock.
Yes,
this is the coverage that he gets.
Yeah,
he gets hot dish coverage.
He gets hot dish coverage.
Get coverage in the local news. We'll talk about how you're supposed to mock those who are anti-vaxxed and die.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get into that at 7:35 this morning.
The Star Tribune apparently felt like that was an opinion worth elevating and considering seriously, so they republished an editorial that advocates for the mocking of the death of people who did not take the vaccine.
In the 8 o'clock hour, we'll tell you why, if you live in Minnesota, of course, if you're listening to the show, most likely you are, you should not buy an electric vehicle. If we learned anything from Virginia.
Also, if you don't live in Minnesota, you should not buy an electric vehicle.
Is that, yeah, you know, depending on your circumstances, unless you just, your grocery store is like a block away, you just want to, you know, you can just plug it in and go back and forth. Plus, we have a candidate running for Minnesota District 3 joining us at 8 o'clock this morning.
Mark Blixell announced his candidacy yesterday, taking on Dean Phillips in a CD3, and he will join us for the patented Justice and Drew candidate grilling.
Yes. It's hard hitting on this show.
It's, you know, you got to be brave.
I actually think we've softened up a bit. I don't know if you heard my call with Don in Burnsville yesterday.
I did.
Yeah, but it was one of the more pleasant calls with Don in Burnsville.
I wasn't sure what show I was listening to. I thought maybe I pulled up like the wrong program.
Yeah, I don't know.
What is happening here?
New John. I didn't feel like yelling at the guy. I just I'm like, you know what? I'll play his games. I'll answer his questions.
I leave for one day. John and Don are now BFFs.
I wouldn't say that. We just actually agreed to disagree. Surprisingly enough. So, Brett, it's actually convenient you're here because you like yourself the movies.
I enjoy the movies.
You enjoy yourself the movies. I've been sitting on this for a while, and I thought, well, I didn't know if Drew was going to be in today, so I planned this ahead of time. But it still works. It's better that you're back, and we've got Brett here as well. Not that Sam couldn't play along, but I think you're more on top of films than Sam is. And we still can't get her to finish watching Fight Club for crying out loud.
It's the nicest thing you've ever said to me.
When it comes to sort of the pop culture angles of things, Brett's a little more steeped in it than Sam.
So Variety put out their box office predictions for 2022, from surefire hits to the biggest risks. So I figured throughout the show this morning, we can kind of work through the list, talk a little bit about it. I know this weekend, well, they pushed Morbius back. I don't know if you know this, if you're up on this or not. So this is
one of the upcoming Marvel films.
Yeah, through Sony. This is one of the Sony Marvel films starring Jared Leto. So they've moved Morbius. The only big film opening up this weekend is Scream, which apparently is fantastic.
I hope so. I love the Scream franchise. And I know that, you know, it probably overstayed its welcome with the sequels, but I don't care. You know, I mean, that's one of those franchises that I can enjoy even those later sequels where it might have jumped the shark for a lot of people. I enjoy every film in that franchise.
Apparently, people are saying it's better than all the sequels and might even be as good as the original.
I hope
it's supposed to be this fresh new take and all of this.
That would be wonderful.
So the movies we have here are coming out later in the year, so I figured throughout the show this morning we can kind of run through some of these and give some thoughts. So we'll start off with what the Variety says are these sure things. And the good news here is that when you look at a couple of these films out of the gate, the dates at which they're coming out based off of what we'll share later on in the show, what we were talking about with Kevin Roche yesterday, it looks like Omicron's going to burn out, and by the time we get into the March, April, May, summer months, you know, we'll be on the downside of this. They're basically saying that everybody that is going to get infected will get infected with Omicron, so by then it'll have burned itself out. So, on the sure thing list, curious your guys' thoughts, the latest installment of Batman, The Batman, starring Robert Pattinson, comes out on March 4th.
This is in my top five of movies that I'm looking forward to this year, for sure. For sure. Yes, absolutely. I love the look of the trailer. It's got a real film noir kind of look to it, which is obviously, you know, a big part of the Batman lore in the comic books and everything. It's more supposed to be more of a detective film than what you would typically expect from a Batman film. So I'm really curious to check this one out. The only thing I'm concerned about is I heard it's going to be really, really long.
There are so many movies are long. They're all long now, Brett. Yeah,
I kind of think it's fun.
I'm down with that too, depending on the film. I haven't done my little rant before, but 90-minute movies tick me off. Unless it's like a rom-com or something like that. But a 90-minute action film, I know I need a solid 2 hours. If it's good enough, like your No Way Home, and moves fast enough, because that was 220.
We'll have to discuss that later, because we haven't been in the same room since that movie has come out.
Well, we'll get into that. We'll get into that a bit when we dive a little bit later on, because Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse is a part of this too, and there's a couple other films that are doing the multiverse part of it. But before we go to break, Brett, are you excited about the Batman?
Well, the Ben Affleck one to me just left a bad taste in my mouth. I just couldn't get myself to care about the DCEU and the Justice League. I didn't even watch the Snyder cut of that. So to actually go back to kind of the darker, more... I mean, Ben Affleck's Batman shot guns at people. Like, number one Batman rule.
That's your number one Batman canon rule.
Exactly. Like, don't shoot guns and don't kill people. He did both of those things. Like, it just totally threw me. So I'm looking forward to, like, the darker, edgier. And I like Robert Pattinson as an actor a lot.
Yeah, this looks really good. I'm looking forward to it. I'll be seeing it on opening day. I actually liked the Zack Snyder Justice League quite a bit. Okay. I mean, it's long. I mean, you got to take a day. You got to take a day and sit down and watch it. But it is way better than the other one. I actually enjoyed it quite a bit.
Now, when I say I like long movies, I don't mean 4 hours long movies, but
like the extended edition of Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Never seen them, by the way.
Oh,
I know.
Get out.
I know. All right.
Drew, get in there.
Have fun.
No.
Get in there. Get out.
All right, I'm gone.
All right. We'll run through a little some more of these coming up. The box office predictions for 2022. We'll do it throughout the show this morning. Plus, we're going to dive into what we believe would have been Sam's top five for a Wednesday. Justice and Drew on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Got Sam's Top 5 coming up in just a moment. Yesterday, we talked about the fact that, still bummed about this, man. The AMC in Maple Grove is closing down. They're going to put in some home furniture and furnishing store in there or something to this effect. Couldn't survive the pandemic,
right?
There was in the article, it talked about how they hadn't made any upgrades to the theater in a while, and I've been there a couple of times. I didn't really see that it needed any upgrades, in my opinion. I thought it was a nice AMC theater, but it was it was a big theater. I mean, a lot of screens.
Yeah, I've been there once. Seemed like a fine theater to me. You know, when they talk about upgrades, I think of things like, you know, the assigned seating, the recliner seating, you know, things like that. I don't remember if that theater
did,
had them when I went there or not.
They didn't have the recliners in the IMAX theater, but the other theaters, I thought they had the regular recliners. They had the assigned seating just like every other AMC, but apparently they just, and it's going to be interesting to see what theaters are actually able to weather just the next couple of months, because I think you're going to see a downtick in people going to the theaters at least for the next few months, because there won't be any new restrictions put in place, but I think people are going to be avoiding them just because of Omicron spreading around.
It seems like it.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see. But, you know, I think this is not going to be the only theater that shuts down, though, in the course of the next several months.
That's, I know.
You know, I think the chickens are coming home to roost on the effects of the lockdowns and the impact that it's had, and businesses that have been able to survive for now, you know, without something shifting in the other direction, you're just going to see a lot of that now. And we're going to be a year from now, we're probably going to have a lot fewer theaters around the country.
Well, like I mentioned yesterday, I hope that results in the smaller, more upscale cinemas popping up, like back when we were really young before the multiplexes came into to play. Because I'm worried about my Coon Rapids AMC. That's the one that I go to. So before we dive back into Sam's Top 5, a few more as we work through these throughout the show this morning from Variety, box office predictions for 2022. Sure Things on the list of Sure Things. I think everybody can be in agreement with this, especially after Spider-Man No Way Home. May 6th, Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness.
Yes.
That movie, just based off of how much money, because it made all the money that Spider-Man No Way Home made, is already a lock at this point in time. The only question I have about this film, which I'm obviously going to go and see it, is with Sam Raimi directing it. I'm very curious to see what doing that thing with my fingers modern day Sam Raimi is able to do with the franchise now, considering he was the director of the original three, going back to 1999, Spider-Man films with Tobey Maguire. So it'll be interesting to see what he does now in sort of the, I don't want to say new way that we watch films and how they're filmed, but they are different than they were even back in the late 90s and early 2000s.
Sure. Right before No Way Home came out, I kind of rewatched all of the original Spider-Man trilogy just because I was getting hyped for the movie. And Sam Raimi has got a distinct style, a distinct view. And that view, while it was, you know, sort of avant-garde and really fresh when it came out, it hasn't particularly aged great.
Yeah.
So I don't know if he's going to have caught up with the times, or if he's going to stick to his vision. We'll see how it plays out. But as far as like the content and the story, you know, the continuation of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, the continuation of the multiverse that was introduced in not only No Way Home, but also in WandaVision and some of the other, and the What If series and things like that. I'm all in, man. I'm still fully invested in the MCU.
Yeah, and Marvel kind of broke their post-credit scene rules because they just dropped a full trailer at the end of No Way Home. It wasn't like a little, I was expecting like a little tease of like a cape flying around and then it's like, oh, Multiverse of Madness is coming. No.
It was
full trailer.
Yeah, it was awesome.
So, and apparently I read that it's going to be essentially a horror movie, like, or more like the closest thing Marvel has ever made to a horror movie, which is an interesting way to go, but the multiverse is probably a scary concept,
and makes sense for Sam Raimi that he would because he's obviously played in that genre before, and I can see his style of horror lending itself to that particular story.
And if you watched the What If series on Disney Plus, especially the climactic episode, you can see where that would come from.
Yeah. With I'll ask you, do you think that's the same?
Yes.
Evil?
Yes.
100%?
Yes.
Locked in?
For those that know what we're talking about. For everybody else, we're sorry.
Yeah, exactly.
we apologize
for talking over your head.
We went deep. All right, one more here, and I'm going to venture a guess. I'm probably the only one of the three of us this morning that's excited about this, but on June 10th, the third installment in the Jurassic World series, Jurassic World Dominion. I'm excited about it. I'm one of the few that actually really liked Fallen Kingdom.
Ugh.
And it too made over $1 billion.
Along with the
2015 Jurassic World. And I actually, apart from some wonkiness towards the end of Fallen Kingdom, I really enjoy this. I'm looking forward to more CGI dinosaurs.
Nah, not me. Unless this one comes out with, like, you know, 90%+ on Rotten Tomatoes and all of that, I'll wait for this one to show up on streaming.
I liked the first one, but the female lead, the writing for her was just so stupid. Like, she just was, like, the biggest idiot of all time. Like, just didn't care about her kids.
Yeah.
Even though they weren't her kids. But you know what I mean.
But, you know, CGI dinosaurs.
And they fought
and stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's all.
And a new one, too. That's immune to the plot.
Boy, if I could take a picture of Drew's face right now, it would make just the perfect Matt meme. Just the Mattest of memes. All right, we'll take a break from our looking ahead at the biggest blockbusters box office prediction for 2022, and we will get into Sam's top five coming up, including Joe Biden yesterday. Going all in on the filibuster, and we'll give you our thoughts next.
Let's go, Brandon. Yeah.
News Talk AM 1130 103.5 FM. Welcome back to your Wednesday edition of Justice and Drew. No Sam today. She's out under the weather. Hopefully back tomorrow, but fake Sam in there. Brett pushing our buttons and answering your phone calls at 651-989-5855. Very much appreciated.
I just told Drew that my brain is a weapon against me.
Yes, it is.
It was making him chuckle.
Yes, it is.
That was making him laugh.
It's a weapon against me too.
Yeah, man. You just it's a weapon against a lot of people. You know, I really do pray that there are studies that are done. We need to get into Sam's top five, but just kind of to add upon what we were talking about, why I made that comment. I really do hope that there are a lot of comprehensive studies of the psychological impact of what this pandemic has gone and done to people.
Yeah.
And
it's broken a lot of people.
And just the adverse effect that it's had on individuals. And I was telling Drew, I mean, for me personally as well, I've been through the grueling past 4 months with a lot of different, you know, health-related issues through, you know, what I talked about with the colonoscopies and all that kind of stuff and dealing with the anemia. And the effect that it had on me just mentally dealing with that, because it's really difficult, you know, the oxygen doesn't go to your brain. And I've, you know, learned through the past couple of months of just the power that anxiety can have on people and how it can produce feelings and emotions and pain in your body where you're not even dealing with anything. You know, you have to go to doctors to find out, and you understand that, no, you're actually fine. It's like, no, man, your brain is doing this to you. And I think for a lot of individuals, because we were talking about, you know, side effects from the vaccine, and not to say that there isn't, but a lot of people concerned about these types of things and people that are reporting them. I don't doubt that some people are dealing with them, but I think a lot of people, it's more in their mind. There's an expectation and there's an anxiety that's perpetuating a lot of it. And I think we've only, you know, scratched the surface on just the negative impact of what this pandemic has done to people over the course of the past couple of years.
I agree. And I don't know that we'll ever really get a full grasp of it, because, you know, the damage that it's done, you know, is going to look different in a lot of different people.
Yeah.
You know, depending on your age and depending on your health conditions in general. But there's no doubt that, you know, the lockdowns and everything that's been associated with COVID for the last couple of years has done severe amounts of damage to a lot of people.
Well, and you become accustomed. Your body gets used to being in that state, to where you actually get really good at perpetuating the anxiety. It becomes, like, for a lot of people, it becomes their set norm, as opposed to being, you know, happy all the time. And it's incredibly unfortunate. And it's unfortunate that the leadership that pushes a lot of this garbage, you know, did so purely out of political gain without any regard whatsoever. And we talk about the financial aspect of it, livelihoods of individuals and businesses being lost. But then you couple that with the pain and anxiety that brings upon people on top of the fear, you know. And man, it's just, this has been far more devastating than it ever needed to be.
I would even argue that the impacts of the response to the pandemic has been far more devastating, you know, depending in different ways,
sure,
than the pandemic itself.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know. Let's jump into what we believe would have been Sam's top five for a Wednesday.
Number one.
It's on, John. They're nuking the filibuster. President Biden gave a speech yesterday. I mean, kind of. And in it, he gave his, what's described by the Hill, his full-throated endorsement, not half-throated endorsement, for changing Senate rules to allow federal voting rights legislation to pass via a simple majority instead of a 60-vote threshold.
They're going to be able to pull it off? Are they going to be able to swing over those holdouts?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
I don't think so.
Still frightening to think about, though.
I'm not ruling it out, but I would say odds are against it.
So much hypocrisy, too. I was watching a clip from Amy Klobuchar back from 2013 talking about not getting rid of the filibuster and about how this is about, you need to keep it there because this is about making sure that you have consensus.
She
from
was
both
in the minority
sides.
Then.
Yeah. It's
she was in the minority then, yep. So it helped her.
Yep.
Now she wants to nuke it because those darn Republicans just won't let her pass everything they want to pass.
Nope.
Biden in the past has expressed an openness to tweaking Senate rules, such as reinstating the talking filibuster. He's also expressed a support for the filibuster in the past. I mean, everybody who's been in the Senate or spoken on this issue at one point or another has flipped positions depending on which party is in the majority and which is in the minority. In Tuesday's remarks, he made clear he supports changing the rules, quote, whichever way they need to be changed to prevent a minority of senators from blocking action on voting rights, setting the stage for a high-stakes fight in the Senate. So it's on.
Yeah.
They're going to try. I don't think they'll succeed, but, you know, I could be wrong. I've been wrong in the past.
Number two.
Out of Fox News, Education Secretary Miguel Cardona solicited the much-criticized letter from the National School Boards Association that compared protesting parents to domestic terrorists, according to an email exchange reviewed by Fox News. The email exchange indicates that Cardona was more involved with the letter's creation than previously known. President Biden's Department of Justice relied on the NSBA letter, which suggested using the Patriot Act against parents in creating its own memo directing the FBI to mobilize in support of local election officials. In the October 5th email, the NSBA Secretary Treasury Christy Sweet recounted the NSBA interim CEO Chip Slavin that told the officers he was writing a letter to provide information to the White House from a request from Secretary Cardona. Previous emails had revealed that the NSBA was in contact with the White House and the Justice Department in the weeks before it publicly sent the letter.
Yep.
This went all the way to the top.
Yep, it was fabricated, completely fabricated, completely made up, but they needed the letter from them so that they could try to justify using the Patriot Act against concerned parents.
The emails were obtained by a Parents Defending Education and a Freedom of Information Act. Request, should this allegation be true, according to PDE President Nicole Nelly, it would reveal that this administration's pretextual war on parents came from the highest levels. It's frightening. It is absolutely frightening. And I think there's an overreach taking place here on a lot of different levels, especially, you know, when it comes to our school system. And I think it's going to cost them dearly come November.
I think it already has cost the Democrats dearly. I mean, in a lot of respects, I've seen several editorials and articles written over the past couple of weeks. I was reading one yesterday talking about defections from the Democrat Party and why people are defecting. And one of the most common reasons cited is the way that they're handling the public schools, not just the CRT stuff, but the lockdowns and the keeping kids out and the bending over to the teachers' unions in state after state after state, letting them dictate when they get to come to work and when they don't have to come to work and when we're going to do remote learning and when we're not. I think a lot of parents that did not realize just how much power these teachers' unions had around the country have really woken up to it in the last year, and they're seeing that relationship between elected Democrats and teachers' union officials and what they're doing to the schools that their kids go to. And, you know, there's only a few issues that are really going to get people motivated, and one of them is the parents' kids' education. Mm-hmm. And the Democrats have absolutely botched that.
number three.
That mom we talked about, I think it was last week, or maybe it was Monday, the Texas mom who put her COVID-positive son in a trunk finds community support.
No!
How bizarre.
Just gross.
From Fox News, the Texas mom who was charged after her COVID-positive son was found in the trunk of her car at a testing site has received support from the community. Sarah Beam, who is a teacher at Cypress Falls High School in Houston, is being described as the best teacher ever and a teacher with a heart of gold in signs hanging outside of her home. Beam was charged with felony endangering a child following a January 3rd incident where her 13-year-old son was found in the trunk of her car at a drive-through testing site.
Who is endorsing this? What lunatics are writing, "We appreciate you, your students have your back"?
Other members of the teachers union. It's probably a union-directed activity. Beam allegedly told a health official at the testing site that her son had previously tested positive, and she put him inside the trunk to prevent her from getting exposed again, according to the complaint. Authorities also reviewed surveillance footage from the testing site showing the child exiting the trunk of the car and getting into the back seat. She has been placed on administrative leave at the school district, at least that.
So you're saying the teachers' union who teach children are endorsing abusing children. That's what I'm hearing?
I don't know that.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm not saying that. That's pure speculation on my part.
But it does. Okay. I'm going to go out on a limb. Okay. And again, this is pure speculation. I'm going to go out on a limb here. And I'm going to venture a guess. I know who she voted for in the last election. Mm-hmm. And I'm also going to venture a guess that who she voted for in the last election, being most likely Joe Biden, is also the thing that's influencing individuals to go and support her. I mean, again, I'm extrapolating here. I have no evidence of that whatsoever, apart because I read exactly the same story. I haven't seen anything else. But that's my guess. I firmly believe that the politics have gotten so broken and divided in this country that if there is just an assumption that she is a liberal, that people are going to rush to her support because it immediately gets politicized and people are going to justify putting her 13-year-old in the trunk of a car, for crying out loud. And again, that's just pure speculation on my part. I could be wrong. I don't think I am.
Number four.
State is offering $200 gift cards in an effort to get more children vaccinated against COVID-19.
So bizarre. So strange.
In order to be eligible for the gift cards, the first and second doses must be administered between January 1st and February 28th. Officials say families are able to receive one gift card for each eligible child who is vaccinated in that time frame.
So they're paying parents to jab their kids.
Yeah, we have an editorial later on in the show. We talked about it at length yesterday with Kevin Roche in the 8 o'clock hour from Healthy Skeptic about this. You found a New York Post piece this morning. Omicron, and we talked about it with Lucius from the University of Minnesota yesterday as well, with the protest against the University of Minnesota mandates. Even if you thought that there was justification for the mandates to get vaccinated before, right, which I didn't, and I think most of us didn't, but even if you thought that, Omicron has nuked that entire idea. It doesn't matter anymore. And again, when it comes to children getting vaccinated, I mean, children are already less likely. We're already less likely on the really, really bad version of COVID-19 to get that sick. Omicron is way, way less lethal. They're way less likely to get anything more than a sniffle. So I don't understand this desire to go and bribe individuals to vaccinate their children. I'm pretty sure if someone wants to vaccinate their kid, they've done it by now.
Everybody who wants to be vaccinated is vaccinated by now. I can't imagine anybody out there right now.
Well, except Canada. Did you hear about that yesterday?
No.
Also, in Canada, they told the Canadians in Quebec that they could not, in order for them to get their alcohol or their marijuana, they had to be vaccinated, and they skyrocketed.
Oh, okay. There is that. Why don't we try that with the kids?
Or the kids' parents.
Instead of $200.
Tell the kids' parents, you got to get your kid vaccinated or you can't go buy alcohol or get your medical marijuana. Well, as you mentioned yesterday, I think people in America would protest before they went and ever did something like that. But I generally am with you. Anybody that wants to be vaccinated at this point in time or wants their kids vaccinated, they're vaccinated.
Yeah.
Number five.
A Betty White update. The beloved TV legend's immediate cause of death has been listed as a cerebrovascular accident, which is the medical term for a stroke. That's this is from Fox News. That's according to her death certificate, which was obtained by TMZ. According to the certificate, White had suffered the stroke 6 days before her death. Of course, Betty White died at the age of 99 on December 31st on New Year's Eve. I want to know what she knew about 2022 that she's not telling us.
I don't even joke about that.
Too late. I heard it did.
I don't even joke about that.
In a statement to People magazine, the late star's agent and close friend said Betty died peacefully in her sleep at home. People are saying her death was related to getting a booster shot, but that is not true. She died of natural causes. Her death should not be politicized. That is not the life she lived. So apparently it was a stroke. And looking into some stories around the cause of death for Bob Saget, too. Uh-huh. Which is turning into quite a mystery.
Now that's become a conspiracy. People are blaming a booster on that now. Yeah. That's the conspiracy.
But, I mean, he was apparently in good health.
Yeah.
Right? No signs of drug use, no signs of foul play,
right.
No signs of anything like that. So the cause of death for Bob Saget still up in the air.
I believe we'll probably find out in pretty short order once they get the autopsy done, assuming they release it. But, yeah, I read a story this morning that there's the conspiracy going around is that he got a booster and then he died because of the booster, mm-hmm. which I think are just individuals that want to go and try to, you know, put a negative spin on the booster so they're taking advantage of a death like Bob said. Because I guess he tweeted or he mentioned that he had gotten boosted recently or something like this when it came to COVID. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the cause of death in his case actually was. So, again, I think we'll probably find out in about a week or so.
Hey, I think that was a pretty good job of figuring out what Sam would have wanted in her top five.
I think it was all right.
I think we nailed it.
I thought it was okay. Well, when we get to the end of the show today, we can decide with what John and Drew learned today. Box office predictions for 2022. We have one more item on what Variety says are the sure things list. So we had The Batman, Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. We had Jurassic World, Dominion. Now, they had it in the sure thing, right? They had it as a sure bet. I will say, for as much as I'm looking forward to Jurassic World, I wouldn't necessarily put it in the sure bet category, except for the fact that Fallen Kingdom, which was panned by a lot of people, did also make $1 billion.
That's what I was going to say.
Globally, so
if the sure bet is in regard to box office performance, then I would say yes.
Sure,
the next Jurassic World movie is a sure bet. If the sure bet is in reference to, is it going to be a good movie? Is it going to be well received by fans and or critics? No, I would not put Jurassic World in the sure bet category.
The last one they have on their sure bet category is the animated Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse Part 1. The only thing they have here as a list of cause for concern is animation has been a mixed bag at the box office in the pandemic. Who knows if audiences will decide out of nowhere if this is the one Spider-Man story too many.
I doubt it.
I doubt it, too.
I doubt it. The first one was really good, really well-received, did incredibly well. We're talking about the animated Spider-Man multiverse movie.
Yeah,
came out a couple years ago.
Into the Spider-Verse, yep.
Yep. I would be looking forward to a sequel, and it's not coming out until October. And even the Dr. Fauci's of the world are saying that, you know, we're going to see a dramatic decrease in infections and all that real soon as this Omicron wave makes its way through the population. So by the time October rolls around, man, I don't even want to think about if we're still going to be dealing with pandemic stuff, but I don't believe we will be.
Well, see, now you normal people would say, you know, it's going to come out 10 months from now. I say it's going to come out 3 variants from now. So that's when the movie's actually coming out.
You shut up in there. Get out again. Get out again.
I like the first one. I didn't think it was like the Oscar-worthy movie that everyone... Didn't it win an Oscar? Like, best animated film?
I think it might, yeah.
I mean, it was good.
And in that category, I don't remember what was out that year, but in that category, it probably was the best animated film of the year.
Yeah, and I'm a huge Spider-Man rube, too. So, I mean, I liked it. I didn't hate it, but for whatever reason, it just didn't really, like, grab me like No Way Home did. Or, I don't know, maybe I'm just a live-action, elitist.
I am, to an extent. I certainly am. I'm not really drawn to animated films in general, and I was kind of not really looking forward to that movie. But then when I saw it, it was really good. A lot of fun.
Yeah, I actually would argue that the Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse paved the way and gave them the confidence to do No Way Home the way that they did.
100%.
I'm somewhat convinced of that. And the trailer for Across the Spider-Verse Part 1 looks really good as well. We'll run through what Variety considers the safe bets, a few of those coming up. Plus, President Biden calls Kamala Harris president again.
Let's go, Brandon!
We'll share that audio with you next on Justice and Drew.